Those of us of a certain generation remember Arnold Schwarzenegger quite well, the Terminator. In the first Terminator, because of course everything nowadays has sequels, Arnold is the bad guy, and he's searching for somebody who is in police custody. He comes to the police station, and he asked the officer there if he could see Sarah Connor. And the officer dismisses him, doesn't even look up, doesn't even realize who's asking him, this big guy in sunglasses, what's going on. So Arnold looks at the plate glass window that the officer's sitting behind and checks it out thoroughly and leans in to the window, to the officer, and says these words, "I'll be back," right? With that thick Austrian accent of his. And, of course, the officer says, okay, whatever, you know, doesn't even acknowledge it. Well, 30 seconds later, the Terminator plows into the police station, wrecking everything, busting through the opening window. Big and bold. Now he's got his attention. We Christians expect Jesus to come back in much the same way, don't we? In the sky, flying, floating up in the clouds, trumpets, maybe for good reason. 21 of the 27 books in the New Testament talk in some way about Jesus coming back. Even Jesus himself talks about how I will be back. I will return, he says. So, we expect it. The book of Revelation is all about that. Vivid depictions of all these supernatural creatures and angels and plagues and wars upon the earth. Thessalonians, the first book written in the New Testament, talks about how we will all be caught up in the sky with Jesus. We'll see him again. Our creeds say that Jesus will come back to judge the living and the dead. We affirm this. It's a big part of our faith. So that's why in many centuries since then, in the 2,000 years since Christ has been in the flesh here on earth, we have expected it many times. If you read the New Testament and do a careful reading of it, you'll see that many of the first generation or two or three expected Jesus to arrive back at any moment. Jesus is coming soon. They expected it within their own lifetimes. And when it didn't happen, they seemed about disappointed. And Paul has to talk about that and has to reassure them in the faith that yes, still keep on with what Jesus taught us to do. Keep on expecting it. Though some of our friends might sleep, well, time passed. In the 200s, one of the church fathers, a theologian by the name of Tertullian, he expected Christ to return in his time. No. The year 1000 approached, the millennium. Those that were aware that it was the year 1000 expected Christ to return of all times. Wouldn't it be 1,000 years? Wouldn't that be symbolic? Well, no, we're still here. 1200, Giacomo Flore, another writer, expected and wrote extensively about the return of Christ. The Reformation in the 1500s, people expected Christ to return then when all the turmoil and chaos was going on in Europe. The 1800s here in America with all those revivals and tent meetings that were going on, people expected Christ to return. The 20th century, now into the 21st century, a poll, a survey taken, says that a third of Americans, not even specifically Christian Americans, Americans, supposedly Christians, but a third of us in this country expect Jesus to return in our lifetime. statistics. How many predictions have there been? Remember a few years ago, there was a gentleman on the radio with all these red moons that were happening during the year. He had a time and a date even set. Had to change it 3 or 4 times. We're still here, folks. Yet we are still here. What are we to make of this talk of a second coming? Second coming. What gives? When Jesus was gathered with his disciples at that Mount of Olives, and one of his disciples says, "Hey, is now the time you will restore the kingdom? Is now the time?" Jesus' response is no. It's not for you to know the time or the Father's plans. But, when the Spirit comes upon you, you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem, in Samaria, and to the ends of the world. Wait for it. And then he ascends into heaven. And then they're so dumbfounded, they're staring up into the sky. 2 angels come and say, "Hey, men of Galilee, what are you doing?" Jesus is going to come back the same way that he left. And so we expect Jesus to come back the same way. Sometimes we have obsessed about it to the exclusion of that instruction of Jesus to wait for the Spirit, for the coming of the Spirit to empower you to be witnesses. Jesus has to change your focus, has to turn us around and say, "Hey, don't worry about it." Yet we still wonder, don't we? Well, proposing a thought here. Could it be that we're thinking of Jesus' second coming wrong? Just bear with me. Do we expect a literal coming of Jesus? Floating in the sky, touching down on the ground, a great sort of raising of spirits up into the clouds to meet him there. Should we expect that? What if, I propose, Christ is already come? Christ is already here. And no, I'm not talking about some sort of dispensational theology that you might hear on the radio posed by people. I'm talking about already knowing that we are in a different set of circumstances. We are in the end times. We're already here. We should perhaps think about Christ coming again differently. In fact, maybe we shouldn't even call it the end times. I think we should call it the Easter times. The Easter times, meaning that Jesus is alive. Alive. Jesus comes to us all the time. Jesus keeps returning to us all the time. Keeps appearing to us again and again and again, over and over, whenever we need him. Whenever also we might least expect him, Jesus comes, surprising us like a thief in the night, like Jesus warned us about in the Gospels. How many of us can attest to Christ coming to them, could bear witness to this, could spread this word of Christ being in their lives? I hope all of you can. But maybe that's not good enough for us. Maybe that's why we keep looking to the future. Maybe that's why we keep asking the question that disciple asked. Is this the time, God? Is this the time? Is this when you will restore the kingdom to Israel In other words, is this the time when things will be made right? Why? Because we read at the end of Revelation where everything will be put right. Evil is done away with. The devil is no more. There's no more crying or pain, and everything is reconciled. There will not even be a need for a sun, because God himself will be the light that lights our lives, and everything will be as joy. Is this the time when God will keep that promise? When? How long, we ask? Maybe until that time, whenever that is, that time we're not supposed to know about, we're not supposed to understand when it comes, maybe, in order to better function in our world, we need to think of things differently. We need to take a cue from the disciples, even if they were clueless, looking up into the sky, wondering where Jesus went. They did look up, yes. Look up, look down, look around. Three things. I read a story this week about, actually it was more like a TED talk. She was telling her story. She's a photographer and she lives in a big city, and she talked about how she loved to film the sky. She'd take pictures of the sky, take video of the sky, but she tried on purpose and to look at other things, to look around and to look down. She began to find all kinds of things around the city, walking around it. And then she began to find and get obsessed with a very unlikely thing, manhole covers of sewers. Sewers that have muck and grime and waste. She began to talk about the beauty of a manhole cover in the street and the design on them. She noticed all kinds of things in those few weeks in that project of hers. So yes, look up. Look up to the sky. Do what the disciples did. Know that you don't have to do it all yourself, that Jesus is still with us. Jesus can be our strength. Jesus is with God. Jesus ascended to heaven, so that we who are also united with him can have a bit of heaven as well. It doesn't have to all come from within us or from around us or from other people. We can be inspired by looking up to God, to the Son of God, the first and last, the one who conquered death and is sitting at the right hand with the Father. We can be inspired by looking up. Many people ask the question, when Notre Dame burned several weeks ago, and over a billion dollars was donated from all over the world, wealthy French people and many other people, many of whom have never seen Notre Dame, nor had any plans to ever be there. Many people ask the question, why should we do this? How many people could have been fed with that money? Perhaps it's worth to ask that question. But one thing is for sure, being in a grand cathedral can be inspiring, can cause us to look up to God, to be inspired. Interesting. But don't just stand there gawking on the hillside where we've known Jesus before, on that Mount of Olives. Begin to look down from the mountain. Look down. Look down upon the least of these, the depressed, the anxious, the needy, the poor in spirit. Seek to serve people who are downtrodden. One of the last things that Jesus says in the Gospel of Matthew, we're not in Matthew, is the parable of the goat and sheep. It's a pretty long one. It says that the emperor of heaven separates everybody basically on how they treated the least of these. Something to think about. At the end of John, the Gospel of John, Jesus admonishes Peter to feed my sheep 3 times over and over again, and Peter gets frustrated. Feed my sheep. So yes, look up, look down, feed the sheep, help those in need, but also look around for your own selves. Notice where the Spirit guides you, where the Spirit is guiding you. Notice what sparks your attention, what grabs you. Be patient. Remember Jesus' instructions, wait. Be patient, but also be ready to go at a moment's notice, like the disciples were at Pentecost, meeting together, praying, waiting for the inspiration of the Spirit to act. Ask God to open your heart each and every day to the return of Christ in many, many different ways in your lives, by looking up, looking down, looking around. Jesus will be back. Jesus is back.